Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Not here to ask you to vote for me, but I do want to join daughter Liz, who's with me today. Join us in casting your ballots for John McCain and Sarah Palin.
I'd like to congratulate Senator McCain on this endorsement, because he really earned it.
Dick Cheney and Barack Obama over the weekend. Cheney almost as tactically smart as Joe Biden, saying Obama will be tested by an enemy in his first 6 months, don't you think? Historian Douglas Brinkley will be our first guest this hour. His many books include biographies of Rosa Parks, John Kerry, Jimmy Carter, Jack Kerouac. He's written about D-Day and Ronald Reagan's best speeches and more. He curates Hunter Thompson's papers. He's a history professor at Rice University. And we'll do a little contemporary analysis. We'll do a little history. I want to cue up this Bill Clinton ad from 1992. And this is, of course, the year that President Clinton was first elected. And tell me if this sounds just a little bit familiar.
It's time we had a president who cares, who takes responsibility, who has a plan for change. I'm Bill Clinton, and I believe you deserve more than 30-second ads or vague promises. That's why I've offered a comprehensive plan to get our economy moving again, to take care of our own people and regain our economic leadership. It starts with a tax cut for the middle class and asks the rich to pay their fair share again. It includes national health insurance, a major investment in education, training for our workers, tough trade laws, and no more tax breaks for corporations to move our jobs overseas. Take a look at our plan and let me know what you think. I hope you'll join us in this crusade for change. Together, we can put government back on the side of the forgotten middle class and restore the American dream.
Paid for by Clinton for President.
Take a look at my plan and let me know what you think. I hope you'll join us for this crusade for change. Does that sound familiar or what? I've offered a comprehensive plan to get our economy moving again. Of course, there was an economic downturn at that time that they were calling the Bush recession in those days, 1992. Of course, Barack Obama asked folks to go to his website to read his plan. This ad just says to get a copy of the full plan, call 603-668-1992 or visit your local library in another part of that commercial that we didn't play. So that was pre-internet, and we see how influential the internet has been in the Obama campaign and this race in general this year. So now historian Douglas Brinkley, professor at Rice, joins us to talk about some of the history and some of the current moment. Professor Brinkley, welcome back to WNYC. Great to have you on during these historic times. How are you?
Well, I'm fine, thanks.
Now, which Douglas Brinkley is most active in your own mind right about now? The one who wrote about Rosa Parks, or the one who wrote about Reagan's great speeches of 1984, or maybe some other one?
Well, I do think about Rosa Parks a little bit now, or about the freedom struggle and the civil rights movement in general. You know, when you talk to I used to interview Mrs. Parks in Detroit and in California, in Washington, and today she was a real devotee of Martin Luther King Jr. And that thought of someday having an African-American be president of the United States seemed like a dream, something very far removed. But on election night with Barack Obama winning, it seems to be a huge fulfillment of at least a major part of Dr. King's dream. I also think about other characters when you study African American history, people like Muhammad Ali, who in many ways, you know, kind of it was a transformative figure when he changed his name from Cassius Clay to, you know, Muhammad Ali, and was able to start, you know, and particularly in his Parkinson's years here, kind of made people comfortable with the idea of somebody that had an Islamic background with who had changed his name somehow being American, not somehow anti-American. And then people like Nelson Mandela and Bob Marley, and you think about all sorts of people with Barack Obama. He's going to become and already is a great historic figure.
Now, you're from Atlanta originally. Can you believe what's going on in Georgia right now? It could actually be in play for Obama for tomorrow, according to what the pollsters and the pundits are saying in the last few days. Black turnout and early voting has gone up to 35% of the vote from 24% in recent elections. What do you think about your home state?
Well, this is Georgia really is in play, and the African-American community there is really wanting to turn the state for Barack Obama, and they are coming out in groves right now. I mean, I think one of the key buzzwords of this election is going to be early voting. I mean, we're dealing with about a third of Americans early voting, but the amount of African-American participation in these southern states, particularly Virginia, North Carolina, and Georgia, is really historic. I keep seeing this as almost a folklore moment, you know, that suddenly for the people coming in from the countryside and from apartment buildings and everybody lining up and willing to wait and wait and wait for Barack Obama as I think in the forget American history, in African American history, it is just a stunning occurrence going on as we speak in Georgia and what looks like is going to happen tomorrow.
We can take some phone calls and comments on our comments page or questions for historian Douglas Brinkley. Put any of this in historical context with a comment or a question at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or, of course, post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show for the Douglas Brinkley segment. You know, talking about Georgia, I've heard it said that a lot of white Southerners might actually have an easier time voting for a black man than a lot of white Northerners, because the South was forced to deal explicitly with race during the civil rights movement. Do you think that's reality or hyperbole?
I think there's some hyperbole, too, but you know who argues that point fairly persuasively is Alice Walker, who wrote The Color Purple. She's from Georgia, and she often says that. She often feels that and there's more enlightenment in the South, and she'll point to how Lyndon Johnson, being a white Southerner, was the president who did more for African Americans than any others since Lincoln. And people like Ralph Ellison used to talk about that also, meaning there's a group of African American intellectuals who feel exactly what you said.
Let's play a couple more historical clips. This is a Reagan ad from 1980, the year that he was first elected. And, of course, he had at least one similar thing to Barack Obama coming in, which is that he was the outsider. The country was in an economic slump. People weren't sure. People probably wanted to replace Carter, but weren't sure that they were comfortable with Reagan in certain respects, and so he had to come on and make them comfortable enough. Here's a little piece of how he tried to do it in a 30-second spot.
This is a great country, but it's not being run like a great country. Look at these heating bills. Many families pay hundreds of dollars a month. Others go without heat. We must eliminate restrictive controls and use more of our domestic oil and natural gas. And we must use all our technology to become self-sufficient in energy so no one can blackmail us. This is a great country. It's time to start running it like a great country.
Only one man has the proven experience we need. Ronald Reagan for president.
All right. So we played a Clinton clip from 1992 before you came on, and now playing this Reagan. In a way, you know, the more things change, nothing changes.
Well, that's a great clip you found. I enjoyed hearing that. You know, at one point early in the campaign, Barack Obama caught some flack from Hillary Clinton when he mentioned that he at times had found Ronald Reagan inspirational. I think both Obama and Reagan have a sort of temperament. They seem to be, Reagan certainly seemed to be on the right, and people would say Obama's on the left. But both of them have a kind of way of a likable kind of all shucks, a bit of a smile. I was watching Obama yesterday tell jokes about Dick Cheney endorsing John McCain, and there's just the way he says it. There's this little wry smile and a chuckle, and they have that, and they're very similar in that regard. And both Obama and Ronald Reagan knew how to communicate to people. When they spoke, you felt like they were talking to you, and that bodes well for Obama's presidency, because I always feel that it's the presidents that can communicate, like a Theodore Roosevelt, who used to be able to just do these, you know, fist-pounding speeches, and 60, 70, 200,000 people would come hear Theodore Roosevelt speak. And then when radio came, our country had Franklin Roosevelt use it so well, and then you've had, you know, with television age, John Kennedy and Ronald Reagan. And you see Obama now being a master of all these forms, including, I might add, sort of the internet and the how to have these great YouTube moments and how to talk to a global audience. He's our real first global candidate, in the sense that people all over the world are watching and pulling for him. He is his celebrity is as high in remote parts of Africa or China as it is in the United States, and he has a constituency that goes beyond our shores.
It is amazing. You were quoted a week ago saying we're looking at Nixon over McGovern or Johnson over Goldwater poll numbers. You're not predicting that kind of landslide, are you?
Well, not quite that kind of landslide, but there, and you know, there's still a everybody's calling it the inside, you know, straight. But I mean, there is a way McCain can pull this out, but it doesn't look good. This amount of early voting, how Obama's energized the base of the party, has brought in moderate. I mean, there are such a thing as Obama Republicans. I mean, look at Peggy Noonan and Colin Powell and Christopher Buckley and Christopher Hitchens, those just being the famous ones. But there's a whole group of people on Wall Street that are Republicans turning to Obama. He's done what he set out to do. He's widened the party, and he's done it by taking a high road, you know, which is also remarkable. He's run a very above-the-board campaign, Barack Obama. There's no real moments or quips that he's made that he needs to take back concerning Governor Palin or Senator McCain. So
right toward the individuals, although, you know, it's easier to take the high road if you're winning, for one thing, and we don't know if the shoe was on the other foot what his campaign would have done. He's also had some things that he said along the way that have offended constituencies of voters, you know, most famously the bitter clinging to religion and guns, and, you know, and there have been a few others.
But yeah, but that was an accident, the one in San Francisco, meaning that was a tape recorded off color moment. There's still a regrets of mistakes. I'm not saying that, but I'm looking at it from a way that the strength that Obama has right now, and I think he had to. He desperately has spent he spent his life navigating the racial divide in America of being half white and half black, and I think he knows where trigger points are, and he did not ever get to the point where he presented himself as anything less than a healer. And that's going to be serve him well. I think you'll see Republicans coming into his administration, an effort to cross the aisle to have a kind of bipartisan foreign policy. And I believe Obama when he says that we're living in an age where people are tired of the food fight, that it's been going on for, you know, two decades now of the shouting and finger pointing from left to right. And I think his presidency will try to break that paradigm.
Historian Douglas Brinkley, my guest on WNYC, 212-433. WNYC, if you want to talk to him, 433-9692. Or post a comment to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show for the Douglas Brinkley segment. And, you know, you talk about wanting to break that that food fight. I mean, my memory tells me that Bill Clinton came in saying the exact same thing in 1992, and he was so careful to take these calculated centrist positions on a number of things, as Obama has done on a number of things. And then, of course, the Republicans went hard at him from day one. You remember Veterans Day, 1992, just days after Clinton was elected, and he was getting booed at his Veterans Day speech, and the culture wars were in as full swing as they ever were, and obviously we know the rest of the history, how the Republican minority in Congress at that time, because he came in with the Democratic Congress, went so hard and so successfully after Bill Clinton. Well, I think there won't be a repeat of that.
Well, that's a good question. For starters, in 92, you also have that Ross Perot factor, who gobbled up that whole third independent factor. So many people wondered whether Clinton could have won if it was just Bush, you know, Clinton minus Perot.
Clinton did not win with 50%.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. And so that made some people wonder whether he, you know, it raised some questions about him. Secondly, I think he was still in the grips of a Republican Party that had Ronald Reagan. Even though Bush had his only one term, I think that that it was a energized Republican Party. Right now, I see a Republican Party that's decimated. It does not look good for them picking up Senate seats, and they may lose 20 congressional seats easy on Tuesday. And so you're looking at a very strong Democratic wave, a progressive movement. And in that regard, it gets, I think that this for the Democrats is a bit like 64 when Lyndon Johnson won, or you have to go all the way back to 1932. Washington is going to be Democrats are going to be pouring into Washington now.
Yes. But how about some of those expectations? And you were raising them yourself a minute ago when you talked about Obama's celebrity around the world. Maybe there are going to be people around the world who expect the United States to change its policy more than Obama's really going to change its policy.
Well, I think that's true. I think there'll be only a few places where policy and foreign affairs gets changed. But, you know, we forget how much symbolism counts. And just Obama going and talking to world leaders and visiting and waving and smiling and speaking makes people feel good. Now, I know that might sound superficial, meaning, you know, our policy in vis-a-vis Afghanistan or Pakistan may not be that much difference over Obama or McCain. But the fact that he gives us a facelift. He gives this. There's a feeling around the world that the United States has turned cranky and confused and racist. And the fact that you have Obama's president gives you a kind of new beginning overnight. And incidentally, there's not going to be any time for a transition. With Bush's opinion, you know, public opinion in the 20s, and with an economic crisis and foreign policy crisis, you are going to have Obama seen as president from Wednesday. And so it's going to get very speedy. I mean, there's not going to be this long, drawn-out march to late January when the official inaugural is. People are going to assume Obama's in charge right after the election.
Yeah.
That's
a dangerous
patch.
It is. It could be a mess, right? Like this international World Financial Crisis Summit that President Bush has called for November 15th. Is Bush in charge or is the next president in charge?
And that's a real question. I mean, obviously President Bush is in charge, but his lame duck status is almost historic. President Bush, I mean, he has really got himself where he's made himself irrelevant, or the American public have deemed him irrelevant. So Obama's going to have to do a lot of early smoke signals and messaging. I'm sure there'll be some meetings with President Bush that get some high profile as if a baton's being passed. And I also think Obama will be the one that helps John McCain up if he wins, meaning the hard right or the conservatives are going to throw McCain overboard, and he's going to have lost a lot of stature in the Senate, and I think you'll see Obama trying to work with McCain in a one-on-one way and maybe develop a friendship in the way that Jimmy Carter and Gerald Ford did.
Taher in Croton-on-Hudson, you're on WNYC with historian Douglas Brinkley.
Thanks, Brian. I appreciate you taking my call.
Sure.
What I'm interested is if the Republicans meet a massive defeat at the polls tomorrow, does the professor think that will they split into two factions, a more right-wing party and a more moderate centrist Republican Party? Is that a possibility?
No, the party won't split. I'm not sure how long the moderates. It's going to have to become a party of ideas. I think the conservatism will still be the main thrust of the party. I would look for somebody like Newt Gingrich to take a very powerful role in the Republican Party after the election in the idea of he is a walking, talking ideas factory. He's filled with different views on things ranging from global warming to environmental policy to dealing with global hunger. He widens the net in Gingrich. He's not a very attractive candidate himself for office, but as ideas go, he has a vision for how to lead the conservative movement through these rocky times. And so I think somebody like him will be kind of much more powerful. All these Bush people, I think, are just going to fade away. There is no such thing as Bush coattails. John McCain is spending every moment he's awake trying not to be in a photo op with him. And I don't imagine 10 or 20 years from now people will identify themselves as a W Republican. And so it's an opportunity here to rethink the party. Somebody like Mitt Romney might try to make an early play in leadership, but I'm not sure that's really going to work very well. So they're going to have to kind of develop a whole new class of Republican leaders that learn to deal with learn to deal with the changes in our country, learn to yes. deal that we're not an all-white America.
And, of course, Mitt Romney is not currently in government. It'll be interesting to see who emerges as Republican leaders in the new Congress, assuming the election turns out the way the polls are showing right now, and that remains to be seen. Before you go, one more historical ad, Mondale Ferraro, the team in 1984, which, of course, got slaughtered by President Reagan running for re-election, but listen to what they're running on.
Over the last 3 years, those making $200,000 a year got a $60,000 tax break. Thousands of profitable corporations paid no taxes.
I refuse to make your family pay more so that millionaires can pay less.
This is the debate. Fairness. Will we all pay our fair share? Mondale will close tax loopholes and simplify the tax code. Mondale Ferraro, fighting for our future.
Socialism, spread the wealth. Joe the Plumber. He was overtly running on a raise taxes platform in a way that Obama has finessed in a different way.
There is, historians look at the time we've been living in as the age of Reagan, just as there was the great shadow of Franklin Roosevelt from 1932 all the way to 1980. It was the FDR's view of government was our prevailing force in this country. Since 1980, we've been living in the age of Reagan. And whether you're Mondale or whether you were doing triangulation as Bill Clinton did, you were constantly having to negotiate Reaganism. This is a change in our country right now. I think we can call tomorrow night, if Obama wins, a kind of obituary on the age of Reagan and a beginning of something new. We're not sure what. That's not a criticism of Ronald Reagan. What a run he had to have his ideas and philosophy kind of run the political rapids from 1980 to 2008. That's about as good as it gets for a politician. And he's earned a spot, Reagan, in one of the top ranks of American presidents.
Last thing, we have 30 seconds from our comments page. On the topic of history, America lost a great historian on Friday. Studs Terkel died at age 96. He will be missed, writes Peter from Flatbush. Did you know Studs Terkel?
I did know Studs. Almost anybody in the history business encountered Studs. I've done his show before. I've used to bring students on a bus. I'd call it the Magic Bus. And we'd leave Hofstra University and later out of New Orleans. And the students would study American history and travel on the road. And we would go to Chicago and read Studs Terkel. And then he would spend time with my students. And he was one of this, he had great stories all the way back from the Federal Writers Project of the during the Great Depression, when he was with the great novelist Richard Wright and others there out of Chicago. And he always was so humorous and giving, and he'd sign everybody's books and mug it up for photographs, and always would tell us where he thinks we should go get something to eat or what store to go visit in Chicago. He was the ambassador of Chicago, and he was dying right when we're having our first Chicago president, really, in Barack Obama. There's some kind of transition going on there, but he was a great American.
He was a great American, and David Isay StoryCorps project, the oral history that grew out of public radio and is so popular all around the country and at the Library of Congress. Well, I had the honor of doing the very first StoryCorps interview. Dave Isay set it up to be the first interview, is the first ceremonial interview at StoryCorps, and to establish the tone of it, he had me interview, who else? Studs Terkel.
Oh, boy, that's a great story. I didn't realize that.
Yes, so he will be missed by me as well. He was a frequent guest on this show. All right, Douglas Brinkley, thank you for being a guest on this show today. We really appreciate it.
Anytime. I appreciate it.
Historian Douglas Brinkley from Rice University, Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we go out of this history segment with one more campaign commercial. The year was 1978. The candidate was running for Congress from Wyoming. Recognize the voice?
Having had a mild heart attack led me really to pause and reflect. And upon reflection, we decided we did in fact want to continue the campaign, primarily because we all enjoy being part of something larger than ourselves, something that goes beyond our own personal self-interest. Something as big, for example, as representing the people of Wyoming in the United States Congress.
Dick Cheney, circa 78.